Coming up on this episode of The Break Room.
A24 did not help because they put out a lot of marketing that was like, which side are you on type thing.
Yeah.
There was no indication in any of the marketing that this was a movie about four journalists on a road trip through desolate parts of America, exploring like what it means to experience and keep record of events as they are happening. And halfway through seeing the movie, I was like, oh my God, it's good.
Welcome back to The Break Room for another installment of our well-known and totally done before series, Creators on Couches Having Conversations. I'm Evan, producer here at The Break Room, and joining me today are two of my friends from the YouTube channel Wisecrack, Michael Burns and Helen Flourish. Thank you guys so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having us. We are genuinely excited to be here, right?
Yeah, this is an honor. I hate working on Fridays, so... It was really great. And this is cool too, because sometimes I find reasons to not work that are not like this. But in this instance, I got to say like, guys, I got to go make some content to expand the brand.
Yes, we're expanding the brand. All the brands.
Yes.
Yeah, everybody's brand expanding.
I mean, this is obviously like working, but it's like, are you really working when you're with your friends talking about content?
And like, look at this set. It's amazing.
Incredible. I see it every day. I'm sick of it.
Sick of it.
When I was first thinking about this movie, watching it, I knew I wanted to have a conversation with you guys about it. We do a Break Room movie review for a lot of the movies that come out. But this was a really interesting movie to unpack. It's not a movie that immediately comes to mind when you think like new rock stars or The Break Room. Like it's not like a Marvel or Star Wars thing. And it's something I want to talk to you guys specifically about, especially based on the work that you know you guys have done on the channel, than I used to do on the channel. And yeah, I think it's super interesting, so I can't wait to talk about it. Before we get into your thoughts about our general thoughts, I wanted to give a quick summary about the film in case you haven't watched it or you're thinking about watching it. Here's like a no spoiler kind of summary. Basically, it's what the trailers have told you. The U.S. has fallen into a civil war in the not so distant future. We don't really quite know how far away it is. But it follows a team of journalists who are trying to interview the president as the president and the union forces are losing the fight. And that's basically the summary. It's a road trip movie turned into a war movie. A lot of interesting ideas at play. How did you guys feel about the movie?
Well, I thought the point was... We're talking about the Civil War and we're debating it, and Helen's representing the South and defending position I was going to defend.
No.
So the movie Civil War,
yeah,
which we were to talk about. I mean, I'll say this and I'll pass the ball to, you know, Tennessee's own over here.
Helen's about to leave.
You guys.
I'll say this. When this movie was first, and I think we probably all experienced this, when the trailer dropped and it was advertised on social media, it immediately got roasted. People thought it looked very stupid, because I think we all thought that it was going to be some weird imagining of the geopolitical stakes of an actual American Civil War in a contemporary context. A24 did not help, because they put out a lot of marketing that was like, which side are you on type thing.
Yeah,
100%.
There was no indication in any of the marketing that this was a movie about four journalists on a road trip through desolate parts of America, exploring like what it means to experience and keep record of events as they are happening.
Yeah.
And because of that, like going into it, and I'll be honest, Evan, before you brought, you know, up doing this, I didn't know if I was going to rush out to see it.
Yeah.
And halfway through seeing the movie, I was like, oh my God, it's good.
Yeah.
And by the end of the movie, I had to realize, and I had to talk myself into it because I expected to dislike it, that I liked it a lot, and everything I liked about it is completely different from the stuff I think a lot of people think the movie's about.
100%,
So without, I guess, giving too much away,
yeah.
I'm surprisingly positive about this movie.
Yeah, what'd you think, Helen?
I'm surprisingly positive about it, too. I was in the camp that watched the trailer and was like, this looks ridiculous, this is not what we need right now in America. And I had... been kind of in jest saying that I wasn't gonna go see it. I have a lot of respect for Alex Garland, so ultimately I knew I would go see this movie, but I feel like it would be a stretch to say that I enjoyed it, not because it wasn't a great movie from a craft perspective, But first, because I had a candle burning at home and the whole time was kind of in the back of my mind, like, am I gonna go back and everything is going to
but
be
But that's what
in
the movie
ashes?
Feels like, though. It's already an anxiety-inducing experience.
Right, which,
so that you had a real thing.
I mean, I would argue that perhaps everyone, when they go see a movie like this, should leave a candle burning at home to just, like, amp up,
or just, like,
you
turn
know,
the oven on where just the gas
just,
is running.
Right, exactly. Okay. No, but it kind of messed me up. Did it mess you guys up? Did you feel like you needed to play Tetris afterward a little bit to, like, you know, quell the
Tetris specifically?
Yeah, because it, like, helps with PTSD. Not to say this movie gives you PTSD, but it was.
Well, I see a lot of movies solo, and I saw this one with a friend at a theater that has a bar, and never was I so happy to have a smart friend who's like a filmmaker, so I knew he would have great takes on this, to sit there and, you know, responsibly drink one low-alcohol American craft brew and discuss the film while a trivia night happened in the background.
Because I needed to
unpack
The
film
with
someone. I was glad I had someone to do that with.
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm very much in the same boat, which is maybe boring for this type of video, but, like, I surprisingly liked it. I agree with all the points where it did feel... I think a word that I was using prior to the film and continued using was, and I'm now turning a corner on it, was like the word irresponsible, right? Like, it feels odd to be like, look at this movie that doesn't feel so far away in the future. It is presenting a situation that could happen, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we can't get into it, like, the realisticness of it all, like, why do California and Texas join forces, blah, 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 right? But it did feel, I was like, man, this is a movie that feels really, it feels odd to, like, put this out into the world. But then when I watched it and seeing, like, the stance it took and how it was about journalism and what happens when you actually experience these things and the stance that you have to take, especially as someone who is very interested in photography and has...
You're a good photographer, too.
Yeah. Shout out to Evan's photography.
True, he really is.
Good.
Thank you. I have qualms about just taking pictures of people on the street sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's like, I don't know, they don't know how I'm going to use the image. Like, I don't, if I go up and ask them, and like, oh, hey, you look, like, this is so weird, but can I take your picture? Mm-hmm. And, oh, go back and do the thing that you, right? Yeah. Like, then it creates this, like, this setup and blah, blah, blah. And so there's this interesting, like, thought about just, like, the way that they are just capturing things, but then the movie gives it a different layer to it. It's like, well, how do they feel about things they're capturing? Mm-hmm. We can get into that later.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, I liked it a lot. It's very weird that A24 was like, all right, you know what? Let's use these AI-generated posters because we didn't shoot any footage of, like, you know, American forces storming American landmarks besides, like, the DC stuff, and we can't blow all of that stuff. So let's do, like, I don't know if you guys have seen it, like, the soldiers, like, in the, what's that place called in San Francisco, Dashiell? Palace of Fine Arts, like they're like in the lake or whatever.
Yeah, they have one in Chicago on the river.
Yeah.
With the Swan boat.
Oh, the Echo Park.
That was Echo Park.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's.
Well, no, and that's there's kind of a whole other discussion on, has a studio or a marketing firm so, like, dropped the ball like this? Because I truly think many people will not see this movie because of that.
Yeah,
and if you're about to click away. We're not sponsored by A24, are you?
No.
I'm not. Are you?
No.
I'm not either. Watch it. Like, even if you saw the advertisement, like, this looks butt. It is not butt. It's really good.
It's really good. And it's, well, we can get into this a little bit later, but, you know, some of the arguments around it being political and, like, the questions that should it have been political and that kind of thing. In some sense, I'm kind of wondering if it might as well have been, because I think the marketing turned off such a huge portion of the audience who would have seen it otherwise, that it didn't make a difference, but I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, I guess, like, do you think more people are going to choose to watch the film now out of, like, morbid curiosity, or do you think there's, like, more of the population just is like, you know what, I'm, like, just never gonna watch this because of what I think this is about?
This is going to sound stupid, but I was just reading this New York Times article this morning that kind of mentioned this. It needs a really good TikTok campaign. Okay, like, what was the movie? It just came out with Glenn Howerton and Sydney Sweeney. Anyone but you?
Glenn Powell.
Glenn Powell, sorry. Not Howerton.
Now I'm just imagining that whole movie with Glenn Howerton.
Can you imagine? Yeah. I kind of like it. I'm down for that remake, actually. I would probably go see that.
Shouts to Sydney Sweeney for killing wokeness.
With her boobs.
Yeah.
She is beautiful.
The press that took down the woke infrastructure.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my. But anyway, I don't know. What do you think?
I almost think there's more reasons for people not to see this movie than to see it based on the marketing. Because let's say you're someone who is, you know, left-leaning or something. Like, this is going to be some stupid neoliberal imagining of blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. If you're super right-wing, you're going to be like, this is going to be some woke crap about da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
If you're someone who wants, like, a careful political take, you're going to say, the marketing for this makes it look overblown, hyperbolic, mm-hmm. whatever it might be. So I think they set themselves up with all these reasons for you not to see it.
Yeah.
Rather than giving you reasons to see it. And I know I've talked to folks who were just like, you know, like people especially that have like a pass to a movie theater,
mm-hmm.
are just like, I guess I'll see this. It's going to be ridiculous, but I'll go watch it like the way I want to watch a train wreck or something.
Right.
I guess that is like gets into the first big question I want to talk about. It was like, do you think nobody really wants to see an American Civil War put on screen in this way, right? Or at least what the marketing is saying, right? That's what we're saying is like, they'll be turned off because like, is it too real? Is it just too, like, too morbid to have that, like, out in the world?
I mean, to me, honestly, I was laughing earlier, but the trailer scared me.
Yeah.
Like, and I did not want to, it felt too close to home. And that was one of the reasons I did not want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think especially during an election year, a lot of people don't want to imagine, you know, a film that takes real political anxieties and some of the political bifurcation happening in America right now, where more and more it's like, feels like people have to honor one magical belief system that they're willing to live or die for or something like that.
Right.
Imagining that push to its full extreme is not fun.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone wanted to watch like a movie that's, you know, January 6th, but if they won.
Yeah.
Shouts to them though. Shouts to the Q Shaman.
He's
on the stream right now.
Okay, he did one cool thing though. He went to jail and he like protested because they wouldn't give him vegan food. I think that was so funny. But I think that like no one wants to see that. And then I also think for a lot of people that maybe like movies, we're just like, there's no way to make it good. That's the issue. How do you, especially in the context of a massive nation with so much political and ideological diversity, depending on where you are, how do you, in, you know, 100 to 200 minutes, really show us that?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Without it also being just like a, just monologuing about the politics of it, right?
Right. You'd have to take a really taken angle. I mean, I don't know. We could sit here and imagine ways it could have been done well, but it would have all been very different.
But it's hard to imagine. And like you were saying, Evan, like, I think if you do it that way, you have so many scenes where someone's just like, I remember the day that Texas first blah, 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 and then California did blank.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, so I'm just going to watch you guys talk about the thing.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't want to see a movie like masturbatorily interact with its own Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
You want to see people live in it.
Yes.
And I think that Alex Garland did something brilliant in avoiding that.
If
it was a movie that showed an American Civil War in the way we might have imagined it, then it's like, who's seeing that? What do they want out of it?
I think like there was a so Eric Voss on New Rockstars channel did a breakdown of it, and he one of the top comments was like, yeah, they probably avoided talking about how it all happened so that California and Texas joined so that they could avoid like the blue state, red state of it. And I think it is very interesting that a movie about such a interesting moment in our real lifetime and in a fictional time can be like apolitical in a weird way.
Yeah. Well, I think there's two things, right? One is like, you know, people know the adage when you're writing, whether it's like a story or a screenplay or whatever, you know, start in the middle, start when stuff's happening.
Yeah.
And I feel like more and more that does not happen.
Yes.
Because all of our little baby brains need to be told there is this, then there is this. Here's an 8-minute voiceover that tells you this.
Yeah.
Whereas this movie truly just like starts in the middle of a thing. Mm-hmm. It does not explain the thing. It does not attempt to give us context. It focuses on the individual experiences of people in it. And I think in doing that, like, it is apolitical in the sense that the movie itself, I don't think, has a large-scale political message. Mm-hmm. I think it is political in so much as it forces you as a person who's watching the movie throughout the film to kind of like feel like you are seen by it. You know, it's a movie about, I guess in a way it's a movie about shooting, right? Either shooting people or shooting.
Right. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But in a sense, like, it forces us, if we're not the shooters, shout out to all my shooters, but
no.
if you're not a shooter, we are consumers of those shots.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah,
and I think it's a movie that forces you at a certain point to directly interact with it and not just be removed from it. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a point of that movie where you can't help but think, you know, where do these images and things like this happen in my life? What would my reaction be? And then if you're someone who's at all worked in journalism or whatever, then you're forced to think like, ooh. And I think as well, it complicates the idea of journalism's role as that like fourth estate of, that's what they call it, right? The fourth estate?
I think so, yeah.
At some point.
Yeah, you a journalist, right? You should know. But I think it asks interesting questions about the role journalism has. So while the movie isn't incredibly political, I think it forces the audience to ask some interesting political questions.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That was his goal. You know, if you like, you know, read or watch any interviews with Alex Garland, he does talk about that and how. I mean, when I first watched it, he talks about how it is. You know, the film, it takes the perspective of journalism, of journalists, right? We are watching these things unfold. And then it is up to you to ask questions, as is literally said in the film itself.
Yeah, yeah.
By Lee's character, right?
Like, yeah, that's like the goal. When they released that first clip before the movie was publicly announced, and she's like, "We take pictures so others can ask." Right. I was like, "Oh,
I never saw that beforehand."
Yeah. After Kaylee Spaney's character Jesse, narrowly avoids being shot by that guy, and in the car, right? Yeah. The four of them are traveling, and she is like complaining. She's like, "I should have been taking a picture. Like, I didn't even think about that." And then,
I saw it in the movie. I just didn't see it before.
Right. I'm explaining for the audience.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought Evan thought that I didn't actually like watch the movie.
Yeah.
So I had to be like, I swear to God, I did.
Yeah, you watched Captain America: Civil War, right?
Okay, I'll be honest. I showed up here today. That is what I'd watch. I had to illegally download the movie Civil War. I watched it at 9x speed. I took 19 Adderall and I watched it and I did understand it.
Yeah.
But I also have thoughts on the way in which generational trauma has affected Tony Stark and his relationship towards violence.
That whole moment is so interesting too, of just like, you watch like Kaylee Spaney's character go on this arc, right? Mm-hmm. Where like I think in the first scene too, she asked Kirsten Dunst's character Lee. She says, "Would you have taken a picture of me if I got hit, right, or killed?"
If I got killed, would you take a picture?
Yeah.
And then she goes, "What do you think?" Right, and then it's like open ended, but we kind of infer, and then at the end of the movie, big spoiler, Kirsten Dunst kind of like takes a shot for Kaylee Spaney's character and dies, and in that moment she takes a picture of her dying.
Yeah.
To kind of like,
and she gets shot while she's getting shot.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. How did you feel about that arc for either of those characters or that specific moment in the end?
I mean, it actually really upset me to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily Kaylee Spaney's arc. I appreciated that. I've read, and so maybe my own like ideas are adulterated by other people's takes at this point, because I feel like I've read a lot about this movie, but I did see somewhere someone talking about how this kind of postulating as to whether or not that arc was kind of mirroring the way that old school journalism has turned into sensationalist, like gets in the way of the shot and puts in doing so like puts the old way that is less biased and is more about like standing back and watching mm-hmm. history unfold and being the eyes for the world, like lets that die, right? And kills all. I don't know.
Oh, interesting. Okay,
but,
yeah.
So there's, you know, there's that take, but I guess I really kind of found myself believing in some of Lee's ideals mm-hmm. and so to see her crumple on the floor that way, and I haven't really been able to shake it out of my head in the end.
Yeah, I think like she has a great quote in the beginning of the movie where she's like, every time I was away at war, you know, I thought I was sending a message home,
exactly.
right, to not mm-hmm. do this, and then right. to be so confronted with the reality so heavily, right, to like mm-hmm. be in the White House, to be literally getting shot by the president's forces mm-hmm. is like the complete flip on, like flipping that ideals on her head.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I also just like disproving like any like American exceptionalism that like mm-hmm. comes with that.
Oh yeah. General.
Yeah, because I think there is that sense that we are used to being the spectators
yeah.
of Absolutely. These things.
Yes.
And we
yeah.
almost treat global conflict and global news as just another form of like exciting content in our lives.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like that's why so many people like get thrown off when a thing does happen
mm-hmm.
In America, because we're just like, wait, no, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, it doesn't happen here.
It
yeah.
here. It's crazy. And I do think, to get back to your initial question, the character arcs of, so it's Lee, and what is Kaylee Spaney's character?
Oh, it was Jesse.
Jesse, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, you see this sort of like this type thing, right?
Yes.
Where you, in a sense, you almost see, yeah, there's like a baton passing of mm-hmm. Kaylee Spaney's Jesse becoming the next one up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's also this slow dehumanization of Jesse
yeah.
and a rehumanization of Lee.
Yes.
Because early in the film, and in one of the first scenes, Jesse, Kirsten Dunst's character, sees some things happen and is cool as a cucumber.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesse is like, oh my God, how can you do this? You know, there's a scene where Jesse sees some stuff that makes her throw up in her lap.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And by the end, Kirsten Dunst's character, Lee, is, you know, shaking like she's having an anxiety attack.
Yeah.
Finally catches up with
yeah,
her.
Yeah.
It's like all mm-hmm. of that anxiety, all of that humanness catches up. And, you know, I think it's interesting as well, because at a certain point as a viewer, you're like almost rooting Jesse on.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, you're getting after it. You're taking these shots now. You're in it. You see it. But then at the end, it's like this person who was almost your like mama bear figure on this road trip just died saving you,
mm-hmm.
and you are literally running off to get the shot.
Yeah.
Because that's
exactly.
that's what matters. That's,
yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, even like early on in the movie too, she is taking pictures with Lee in them and taking
yeah.
pictures of Lee, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Becomes more important for her to see the photographer taking the story, because it's like, oh, instead of like your image is crafting the story, you are seeing how someone else is crafting
mm-hmm.
the story, where they're standing, what they're shooting, how they feel, what they mm-hmm. look like, you know? And I think that's so interesting to kind of like talk about photography and like and journalism in that way,
mm-hmm.
Especially when you view war photography specifically, is it an art or is it reporting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people are just like, what shots is she taking at night? Like, you know, the White House, storming the White House, it's like, it's so, like, she's moving around, it's like blurry ass
yeah.
pictures.
Well,
and stuff.
This is also a movie where, like, you need to not ask certain questions.
Yeah.
You're going to suspend a little bit of disbelief.
You need to not ask, where are they taking these? Who are they giving them to?
Yeah.
Where are these being printed or reported?
Why are they allowed to get
don't
that
ask those
close
questions.
By the soldiers? But it's like, maybe. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. So, yeah.
No, I talked to some of my contacts in the military, and they confirmed that that's not how it happens.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, where they go in and they say, okay, we'll shoot these guys. Everyone rehearses it, and then they bring the press in.
Yeah, it's like that. Because, yeah, for those who have not seen the movie yet, there's some scenes where these photographers are literally like over the shoulder of someone with a machine gun,
mm-hmm.
and the soldier's like, okay, when I go left, you come with me. And I'm just like, I don't know if in that moment,
yeah.
if there's any active service people out there, please jump in the chat and let us know
mm-hmm.
if that's real or not. Let us know, you know, where you're at, where you're stationed.
Also,
war
photographers, please.
If war photographers,
let us know.
Where ice cream makers, anyone.
I saw someone get destroyed on Reddit being like, as a photographer, I think this is not how it would happen. And people were being like, all right.
No.
Like that's how you would shoot this, but now everyone
will
shoot it.
And I think the person, I'll shout them out so I don't steal their take.
Sure.
My friend Justin Boyd, if
mm-hmm.
you watch this, Justin, thank you. But he made this comment after we saw it that it was more like a fable, and he saw it as like a fable about American political reality, and like our relationship to journalism. And when you look at it that way, I feel like a lot of the specifics matter less.
Yeah, because 100%. Oh, yeah.
And I think if you read it like as a fable or as a sort of allegory, then it's like, who cares how they're getting these stories to Reuters?
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to Brandon about that yesterday, and I was like, I think I would have liked to see them talk to their employer about why it's important to get this image, because who is paying them? And then I was like,
no.
It would just, all that stuff would just bog down what is already being presented.
Yeah. So it's kind of boring. Yeah, that's a very boring scene.
Well, they do it like Zoom calls, they're like, can you hear me?
Yeah.
We got the big scoop, you hear?
Yeah. Well, we tapped into the satellite.
Also, too, the movie is 100 minutes, which are 109 minutes, which is awesome. If we see all that crap, it becomes a super huge movie, and we don't need that.
Yeah, and then we'd all be saying, yeah, good, but a little shorter. Yeah. I don't know where, but
exactly.
Yeah.
Do you guys, I guess ethically speaking, I'm curious, do you feel like war photography is inhumane ethically?
I did have that thought early on, because like you see all the flashes to what Lee's like history is, and you see you're taking pictures of a guy being lit on fire. It's like, when do you step in, and do you feel like you should step in? It's really tough, right? It's such an interesting thing, where it's like, as a human, I feel like you will want to be, you know, doing the best for humans.
Well, I mean, I think about in America, right? You think about the role of photography during the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. And you had people in the northern states who had a sense of what was going on. But I think when they see pictures like from Mississippi after some of like the Freedom Rides and all that sort of stuff, I do think it was at that point in history, it's important to say, this is what's happening. This is what it looks like.
Yeah.
And I even think in like instances of some like horrific lynchings and things like that. Because I think people truly didn't know that was happening. I think it truly led to some sort of change in consciousness or whatever. Mm-hmm. I wonder these days if we can say a lot of photography of war or violence is doing the same.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder at what point, because we do have so much access to information, and is there a certain point at which we just know it's happening all the time, so we can be like, for example, Jesse and Lee's parents in Missouri and Colorado, who are just hanging out, acting like it's not happening.
Yeah.
Because it just becomes a part of like our feeds, our content pipeline, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't really answer your question about the... I see how it's ethical.
Oh.
In other cases, is it just, this is going to... Like these days, right? I don't think anyone taking pictures in Mississippi in 1962 were like, this is going to get so many impressions.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They're not doing it for very different. They're doing it to be the eyes of history and to hold those
And we know now, like, and this isn't like news, no pun intended, but, you know, the people around CNN have just been like, oh, we make content.
Mm-hmm.
News is a thing we do, but primarily we are trying to get numbers.
Yeah.
You know?
I think the role of the war correspondent has changed pretty dramatically since those who are living that history are able to tell the stories themselves with, you know, their like live streaming something from Syria, for example, which was, you know, I remember seeing this years ago on Periscope of all things, but it's absolutely horrifying, but it feels very different than having someone else, you know, aim and shoot as you go through this thing. But I agree with you. Like it's out of the context of this kind of modern, I don't know, like, rush for likes and various things. It's kind of like it had a really, really important role.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and don't we see a shift? Yeah, in the movie, I forget the two male characters' names.
So Joel is the driver, and Stanley.
So when Stanley gets got, which sucked, but he went out like a champ.
Yeah.
There's a moment where they're kind of recovering after that at the Western Forces Army base, and we see Lee, and she's looking at her photos of Stanley, and we see her delete them.
And I think
that's kind of maybe like the start, or maybe like the second phase of the rehumanization of Lee. If anyone wants to make a graphic that's the cover of The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, but with that picture, please do it.
Damn.
But you know, I think at that point, even at that point, she feels like it wouldn't be right to have a photo of this person I worked with when they were dead. And he was a casualty of the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there was something there where you see the difference. Like, should it be the case that I, if I'm a photographer like that, I'm comfortable taking pictures of dead people I don't know and publicizing those?
Yeah.
Is it a conflict that when it happens to someone I know, I'm deleting that and don't think that should be in the world?
Right, yeah, and what, yeah, exactly. Where is that line drawn or whatever? Yeah, I feel like we have a lot of other things to talk about.
Yeah, but yeah.
I did want to open up some chat questions right now.
Yes.
Regular chatter for us, Sarah Hatchadorian asks, what is your headcanon as why Texas and California would team up? I know Alex Garland has kind of answered this already, but I'm curious.
Wait, I don't know if this is, so I don't know his answer, so if I accidentally say something similar to that, I promise I'm not trying to do that, so let me know. Here is how I read it. If someone in DC went full, like, tyrannical fascist, third term, abolishing the FBI, all this sort of stuff, I think at a certain point, that would piss off two states that are all about freedom or all about independence or all about their own autonomy, albeit in different ways. And I think that that sort of collapse, because at the end of the day, right, most Texans like America and how the government works and believe in a certain version of democracy. Most Californians believe in that as well. And when you dismantle the very foundation of that, I think the two, and you got to think of it this way as well, if Iowa cared, it's like, cool, Iowa, you know, like, sorry. What are you going to do? Like, I think that, so in my headcanon, it's, that as democracy collapses, the two most powerful states in the nation, which each could be their own nation state, which have resources, which are the states too. When we look at even now, like, where are things produced? Where's the oil? Where's the technology? And I think there's a world where those two states could be like, after this, we'll go back to sniping at each other. But like, we are on the same page in this instance. That was my head canon for that.
I think that was pretty much also Alex Garland's
He basically said it. He's like, I think he was like, The answer that I saw, because he was like probably bombarded with that question for every interview, he was just like, all right, listen, there's a president who's in their third term. It's a fascistic regime. Like, dismantling the FBI is wild, right? Like, I think, and I truly think that is enough to get two states to like kind of, you know, set aside their differences, so to speak.
Yeah,
I
to
think
like,
so too.
And it is the thing where, like, does it matter to enjoy the film? However, like, we all should, but there is a way you could, if you need that.
Absolutely.
I know, we were talking about this the other day, but I truly kept thinking, I was like, man, there's so many, like, how are they just getting supplies to each other? Like, if every other state between them is, I mean, I don't know if you guys, like, saw this, but it's actually spread up into, like, four parts of the U.S.
And they're like, Florida has a thing going on?
Florida's the Florida, like,
there's
alliance.
There's the Maoist, the, up in the Pacific Northwest or something.
Did the Midwest do anything cool?
Or no, they're just, we just they're bowed
out? And then I think the Pacific Northwest tried to like keep their own thing, and then
they
joined
would though.
The Western forces.
No, the Pacific Northwest would be the region for as long as possible. Like, no, we're out of this. It has nothing to do with us. I'm gonna listen to Modest Mouse and hang out. And then Florida would definitely do the thing where Florida would want to do stuff, but they would be like, we don't need you guys.
Yeah.
We don't want to team up with you.
Well, I think the whole Southeast was broken off into its own thing, which felt pointed a bit, but but anyway.
But yeah, it was a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Curious what other people's headcanon is.
Oh yeah, and then on the topic of seeing the movie, Kobe Wan Kenobi, one of our regular chatters, was saying, I have AMC A-list, and that's why I watched it. I wanted to see An American Civil War and the political stuff behind that, and I didn't have anything else to do.
Yep.
Yeah, it does seem like it might be one of those movies that people come around to, as opposed to, especially as word of mouth kind of like changes. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can imagine this one too. Like, I think, not to give any free press to anyone, but I think A24 has a deal with Max now or something like that.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I mean, this is a movie. You could imagine like 4 or 5, 6 months, if that hits streaming, you could see a lot of people.
That's true.
Watching this movie at that point.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. And people would be like, you know what? Maybe pretty cool.
Yeah.
And also, it wouldn't be as loud at home, though. It was pretty loud.
See it in theaters if you can.
Yeah.
And it was gorgeous, too.
It was so beautiful.
We haven't even talked about the cinematography yet.
The cinematography was
beautiful.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Also, Dash and I were talking about this yesterday, but like the way that like anytime Lee is kind of like zoning out and you see like the chromatic aberration, like the rainbow tint fringes on the images.
I'm glad you said that because I didn't know the language to describe it.
Yeah, so. And I'm even not 100% sure if it's chromatic aberration.
It sounds good.
It's close. It's
you
close.
Would have.
But yeah, it's just like, because those are the moments where she starts being the most human in a weird way.
And it's like, it's also, you could read it as like, it's the prettiest like, it's like seeing this life in this like kind of like yeah. type of thing,
it,
you know?
It yeah. also just made it so much more sickening because the cinematography is so beautiful. Like the yeah. US is a beautiful country. Like it really is. Mm-hmm. Like aesthetically, it is.
Burns
you look
agree.
Like you're not, she Burns doesn't agree, agree. I mean, I think it is.
I had some friends that thought this is a beautiful country so much that they went to the Capitol.
Oh, God. No, that's not where
Burns
this is.
Really filling in the January 6th spot Jeez. Today, Sorry. Which means
no,
nothing to
no,
you guys.
No, I think you're totally right. And I do think you have that juxtaposition in the film when they're like driving around yeah. and it is like beautiful, rolling hills, everything is great. Oh, yeah. There's guys hanging from the bridge.
There's guys, yeah. Also, I was wondering, I thought I might be picking up on this, but maybe I was just imagining. I feel like there was just like remakes of some iconic war shots in general in this film, but again, like the hanging from the bridge, wasn't that a shot from...
Oh, I'm sure.
I don't remember. I don't know. Maybe yeah. I'm wrong. Maybe somebody in the chat knows if I'm picking up.
There was definitely people hung from bridges in Sicario, which right. is fictional, yeah. but yeah, I mean, it's also
it could have been an homage yeah. to Sicario. I don't, probably not though. Yeah. Or maybe. Yeah, yeah. No. But I'm, but yeah.
Every movie should have to have one homage to Sicario.
Yeah, no.
That should be a rule in cinema.
But it's just yeah. leaving Emily Blunt behind. It's like, no, yeah. you can't go on this one. Just like the female character is like stuck, not being able to participate in the last
one. I want Adam minutes. McKay in his next film to have to do an homage to Sicario.
Oh, God.
I like it.
This is an interesting question, especially based on something we've talked about today. Sarah Hatcher-Dorn asks, is this a movie someone could watch just to have on casually, or does it require and force you to think? Because sometimes I just want to turn my brain off in a movie.
I don't think it's a casual movie.
No, yeah, I don't think yeah. so.
It's like listening to like late stage. It's like listening to Radiohead's Kid A to like hang out at the beach.
Not, yeah, don't do that.
Tony Bagels, I think maybe coming from the Wisecrack stream, said, I like the movie a lot, but the more I think on it, the more I think his story and idea is flawed. There's an absurd amount of both sides and hard to answer with his question without more info. Interesting. I don't know if like it's necessarily both sidesing in the yeah. sense that it's like trying to be like here is a person trying to take a trying to document this event.
Yeah.
So the neutral
instances of the film where I guess you could argue there's maybe both sidesism. I think there's one line where the Stanley character says something to the effect of like, people have more in common than they realize, or something like that. One yeah. of those like lines. And then there's another scene, probably my favorite chunk of the film, when they're in the weird Christmas Fantasyland road thing, mm-hmm. and the sniper shootout happens, and the reporter dude guy is like trying to figure out like, what side are you on? What are you doing? And they're like, that guy's trying to kill us. We're trying to kill him.
Yeah.
And you know, you could read that as saying like, in a sense, maybe like both sides are equally kind of like nihilistic or yeah. empty in what they're doing. Another way to read that is just saying like, often that's what things we turn into these grand conflicts boil down mm-hmm. to.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, I can see, I don't agree, but I see where that's coming from.
Yeah.
I just think the problem is if Garland wanted to explicitly avoid that, he would have had to say too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Or just like, it would have had to, I don't, like, does the movie work better if this is a fictional country? Like, I mean,
I don't,
yeah, like, like Sokovia.
Yeah, like Sokovia, yeah. Really, yeah, really, really turn it off for the normal audience.
What? I'm trying to, you know, I want to.
No, that's true, that's true.
I'm yeah. staring at Ant-Man's helmet. Like, what am I going to do? Not occasionally bring this stuff up?
And the X-Men cabinet behind me.
I keep looking and then I'm like thinking about recent episodes of X-Men 97 in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk about a civil war.
But
I guess it's just one of those hard eggs to crack because I would love a version of this film if someone was able to give us some of the politics mm-hmm. in a way that didn't weigh it down mm-hmm. and didn't feel forced and didn't feel both sidesy and didn't mm-hmm. feel like yeah. just some boring neo-lib take. But I don't know how you would do it.
I don't know either.
And that's why I think I appreciate the approach so much, right? Mm-hmm. It just becomes like, how are we, like you said earlier, what is our relationship with these images, especially when mm-hmm. they are at our doorstep,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I think some of those scenes also, I mean, for example, the one that you mentioned about how, when they're, you know, we have the sniper and they have the folks in the Christmas Wonderland shooting at him and they're shooting at each other. I think some of that is just kind of a comment on the, I'm going to say this word wrong, banality of war. Like, and Civil War specifically. Like,
I don't think you said that word wrong, by
didn't
the way.
I? Oh, great. That was good. Is that correct? Yeah. Okay, super. I do often pronounce things incorrectly. But in this instance, it felt kind of like that case, as well as the Jesse Plemons case, because we don't have context,
yeah.
It kind of felt like this is showing how, in the midst of chaos, and especially in a Civil War, people who want to play these kinds of war games, these militias, right? Like, mm-hmm. this is what they do. This is what they will do. And I think that made it very visceral and real for me. Mm-hmm. Because, I did grow up in the South, and, like, you know, Tennessee's a lovely, beautiful place, but there are definitely people there who, they're not really over the first Civil War.
I
think I won't do that, but... And it's just a general, like, the mythos of it still lives on.
Yeah.
And so I think that there are times when I don't know, it just felt like there are folks who would be very opportunistic mm-hmm. should something like that arise.
And the Jesse Plemons character and their little crew who's, digging a mass grave in the background the entire time that scene is happening, I think gets at that. The way in which there's totally an opportunism around this stuff.
Absolutely.
Did you guys think that he was part of one side, or that he was just doing his own thing?
Well, in the trailer, you think that the thing that he's saying is that he is part of one side.
Yeah.
Like, you absolutely do. Yeah. And but when you see it in the film, no, I didn't think so. I thought he was...
Well, because I think you think about how big America is, and I think the movie's imagining, like, there's certain pockets of the country where as law collapses around them, you know, no one's going there. Mm-hmm. Like, there's zones because their country's so friggin' big.
Yeah.
And then that leads to people like that being able to be like, cool, like, I'm in charge now of Allegheny County or whatever that is. Shouts to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
That was, what a scene. Oh, okay.
What a scene. So, God.
I guess I feel like we've been kind of like filleting the movie a little bit. Probably, so to throw some critical energy in for those in the chat who are just like thirsty for blood.
Yeah.
I think there's a world where, like, some of the character development was a little eh.
Totally.
And often on a road trip movie, especially, you know, classic example of this, the movie Road Trip, you see, it's a good movie. Shouts to Tom Green. But you don't, like, I think in the archetypal platonic version of the road trip film, we have our group of friends, they go on a journey. Via the journey, everyone has some sort of character transformation in their challenge. And by the end of it, they're this new person, yada, yada, yada. And at the end of it, and maybe this is the point, right? I think that our two surviving members of our gang are just like even more who they were, like taking full form.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting.
Joel.
Joel. Like, Joel's just like all in. Like, this guy, and it's set up pretty clearly that Lee is like his bud. They work together, all this stuff. She just dies and he is in there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the scene at the end where before they shoot the president, that moment that's like, no, not yet. I need a quote. And Nick Offerman says,
please don't kill him.
And he just goes, that'll do, and walks away.
And he doesn't even take out an audio recorder. Bro, like, you could say anything. Make it up. No one, who's going to corroborate? No, like,
say his last words were, I want my baby. but I do think it kind of, I guess, and this is the part that I think, you know, in one sense, maybe characters aren't developed enough. In another sense, maybe the question is, you know, why do we facilitate this stuff, right? Because if that happened, we would all want to see those pictures. The moment they hit social media, it would be everywhere. We would consume the hell out of them. Mm-hmm. And I think that even in that instance, you wonder, is what they're doing contributing to democracy?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it just contributing to a sense of spectacle? Mm. Is it making media out of these events? Or, like Lee says earlier in the film, in documenting this, is it a warning for the, you know, Reconstruction era?
With, like you said earlier, like, how often we see, like, such, you know, real and visceral images, like, will that have any more weight than anything else? Right?
Like, mm-hmm. I mean, what have you guys done lately? You know, I mean, what have I done lately? We see horrific images all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe post about some stuff or say like, I feel bad, or if we're really after it, you know, donate a little coin here or there, show up at a march.
Exactly.
But like in general, it just all feeds into our one tube where it all comes through the same tube. So whether it's our favorite cartoon or a video game, or a blog or a podcast or a wonderful stream hosted by the Incomparable Ebony, or, you know, horrific war images, it kind of all feels lumped together. And I think there's something about watching a movie about that. It can leave you thinking stuff. I mean, in a weird way, it leaves you feeling kind of similarly in a vague way to the end of Killers of the Flower Moon, if anyone stayed awake long enough to watch that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, 100%. Yeah.
Well, in what? Like, do you mean like nauseous or like that's?
Well, no, because in Civil War, so after the credits, Martin Scorsese comes out and Jack White's there. No, but so in the sense in which, like, I think that, you know, the monologue we get from Scorsese at the end of The Killers of the Flower Moon calls like the audience into question, but calls the act of filmmaking into question, and especially asks like, what does it mean when we are telling the stories of vulnerable people? What does it mean when we're sharing images? From those people. And I think in a sense, obviously, we wouldn't think of the Nick Offerman character as like a vulnerable person, but in general, in that movie, like, what does it mean when dead bodies in the street are used in that way? What does it mean when it's all reduced to that, and then we just kind of consume it in the same way? And I think this is, you know, and we're going to stay on for 2 more hours and do Killers of the Flower Moon now.
Yeah.
But in that movie, you kind of get the sense where it's like, hey, we watched this movie and we're all like, oh, that's so horrible that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Shrug.
Yeah.
That's true. That is kind of, and that goes back to what we were kind of talking about earlier about the evolution of the role of war journalism and therefore the ethics of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's shifted now because everything is, we are desensitized to these images in some way.
Would you say not even like war journalism, right? It's sort of like, in general these days with journalism, it's just it's a fine line between when you read something. I'm generally curious in the chat if people have like journalists they like or sources they like. I'd love to hear about this, but you know, where is the line between spectacle and imagery and hyperbolic language for the sake of grabbing our attention and keeping us inactive, and those who are telling stories, whether with words or images, that aim to educate us, make us more informed, and challenge our assumptions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that the movie maybe explores, you know, that tension. And maybe we even see that's like, and I know you said this before, but one of the big lines in the movie is when Lee says something to the effect of, it's not our job to tell people what this means.
Mm-hmm.
We show them and like they figure it out. And I think there's even the question of like, is that real? Is that real?
Yeah.
Is that the role of journalism, just to be like, this is what's happening?
Yeah.
You figure it out.
Yeah. And then also like, this is maybe a whole nother can of worms, but like, can journalism be unbiased, right? Like, isn't the act of recording something in a way already just like, oh, I cared about this and I wanted to take this for other people to see.
You are participating in a thing, whether you acknowledge it or not, unless you have like an invisibility cloak or something.
Yeah.
You are there, you're participating, and your actions can have effects.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to act as if you're not a human writing, a human taking those images.
Yeah,
because I get confused sometimes when people will be like, I just want an objective news source. I just want objectivity.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Well, if you want objectivity on like maybe scientific or mathematical matters, and it could be in like a chart, sure.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, in many ways, like, I don't know what that means anymore.
Yeah.
And I feel like the nature of journalism is, and always has been historically, and I think we've talked about this on Wisecrack, is it is political. I mean, it was from the very beginning. And I kind of like where you were going with this, Evan. It's like when you're making a decision about what to shoot, you make that choice through political eyes.
Yeah.
Like, inherently, I think. So.
Yeah, because I said this the other day, and I'm not sure, like, how much I still, like, feel like this is true, because maybe I just haven't consumed enough war photography in my life, which is a very odd sentence to say.
But better,
like, sure. Yeah, but I do feel like it's one of those things where sometimes the photo that is shared the most in these big moments is maybe not the most artistic in a way, but it's because a person was there to get it. And maybe that person could, they could have been standing anywhere, they could have been closer, further, blah, 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 but they chose to be, they, or for better or for worse, they were there and took it because they saw something that they wanted to archive. And so, or preserve. And so with that, it feels like there is a reason that, you know, they have a reason for taking it.
I was going to say one thing, we haven't talked about this yet. The last 20 minutes of the movie, we veered a little off in the movie. I want to say this in case people are still thinking of seeing it. Pretty incredible.
Yep.
I just want to say that. Yeah. In the last bit of the movie, we see a siege on Washington, and it's really full on. I mean, actually, to talk about an homage to Sicario. no, it really does. It has that energy. I really mean that. It wasn't a bit. I'm an earnest guy. But wow. And going from this almost, you know, pastoral filmmaking, interjected with moments of incredible intensity, this like first person shooter type vibe, I thought was really well done, and I thought the shift was jarring, but in a way that made sense.
Yeah, it really worked, and it, it didn't feel like it was like, all right, you waited, now here's the show, right? Like the whole movie, if it just like build it, you know, it's like you left a candle burning at home. Like it was just, it was getting closer and closer to possibly being something really dangerous.
And it did, like it felt like real. And that was like, it's like, if it's hard to imagine a siege on Washington, but if it were to happen, you know, it feels like what it would be like.
I feel vindicated hearing that, because the folks that I saw the film with did not feel like it felt real. They felt like it felt overblown. They felt like it did not feel, I don't know.
You know what you should have said? You should have said, well, how would you do it? And you start recording, and then you send that to the FBI.
Perfect.
And then that's a fun prank.
I'm going to start pulling that on people.
Great. All right, so we're going to hit a few chat questions. Let's see. I like this. Okay, so this goes back to our like kind of alternate timeline, or like, not timeline, but like, is this a different country, right? So Phantom 101529 says, the only way I know I'm going to be able to watch this movie is just accepting the idea that this is an alternate timeline, alternate government timeline, because in my head I'll just be trying to figure things out instead of just watching the movie for what it is. Think it's like, yeah, I think if you can accept that there is a part of this this movie that could be real, that's helpful, but don't get caught up in the details for sure. I think it really just bogs you down. You
know? I don't think the truth of this film is what happens. I think the truth of the film is the idea that certain types of kind of like party-based belief can become these weird religious factions that can lead to like these holy war type things. And I think that's a truth of the film. And I think another truth at the core is what we've talked about, like journalism. But I think that's what matters. I do think most of the rest is just the occasion to explore those ideas. So I think you can easily watch it without worrying about that sort of stuff.
I agree.
Yeah. I think, too, like, it's interesting watching this movie and seeing, feeling that it was very similar to where The Last of Us 2 ends or is. So, like, I won't spoil if you guys haven't played the games, because season two will be that. But there is a there's a lot of similarities in how I think people decide to conduct their time in the new normal of the world. And also, like what you said about religious religious like ideas, like it is very weird that like suddenly in the second movie or second game, people are like, oh yeah, we actually all really dig this person because we think they're a religious figure. And it's like, well, it just happened. You know, when the world starts going down, you cling on to these things that you believe.
And a scene we haven't talked about is more they drive through the town that's like a little Mayberry vibe. Because it's Main Street and everything. And everything seems normal. And they're kind of like, what is happening? And then, of course, Stanley's like, look up there for a second. And we see that the place is like that because it's guarded with guns. And it's people militantly making sure things stay that way. So, you know, you see different reactions to those things and how people take advantage of those things.
Yeah, 100%. Tony Bagel's asking, Garland's movie president needed a compromising Congress and SCOTUS to take a third term. Why did he airstrike citizens? Is there a scenario where federal force would be justified in this way? I don't know. I think that's some of the details where it's like, they just did it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be too like dark or anything here, but there's... there's some stuff in U.S. history. Yeah. If one wanted to Google the Tulsa Massacre, mm-hmm. And there was a similar thing that happened in Philadelphia at one point where a bomb was dropped. Mm.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think we've at various points in history have seen military and police reactions to yeah. various sort of political events
yeah.
that we yep. might have thought of, like, well, that seems extreme.
Yeah, mm-hmm. sure.
And, you know, you turn up the volume a little more.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, and I say to someone, I lived in Baltimore at one point, great city, shouts to Baltimore, where we had a curfew after a series of protests, after the death of this guy, Freddie Gray. And there was drone surveillance over the city.
Oh, wow.
So I remember, like, leaving my house, and I wasn't allowed to, we weren't allowed outside after, like, it was pretty early. It was, like, a week or two. And there was, like, drones just flying over. Now, the drones did not bomb or shoot me, but it gave that sense of, like, oh, really quickly. Things went from, yeah. like, I can yeah. go see a movie at 10 p.m. to, if I open my window after 8 p.m., a surveillance drone flies by.
Yeah.
So, yeah. not to like freak people out or whatever, not to yeah. say, you know.
No, but there's like a, there is like a, on a small scale, a precedent for the kinds of things that do happen in this film. And it's like, oftentimes we don't see them coming until we're looking back.
Yeah. 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 yeah right. You get caught. I think that like that analogy of turning up the volume 10%, mm-hmm. that's so on perfect, right? Yeah. It's just, it's very subtle, but it can just, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, that's what like, art is meant to do sometimes to turn up and accelerate those things
mm-hmm.
to sometimes smack us in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With what's really happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. All right. Two final questions here. One from Ryan Painter saying, overall, do you think the film has had a positive or negative impact on what it is trying to say? So a little like subjective on what you believe the film's trying to say, right? I think it's, I really hate saying this sometimes, but I think it's true in this case where it is like a, like, draw your own conclusions type thing, where I think Alex Garland is really asking questions more than he is presenting answers to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think as being like, let's try to get a little bit more real with this fictional movie, right? And let's try to present you with like a situation, like, how are you going to feel? Because we are not war photographers, right? But it is like we are confronted with like terrible images constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what will you do? I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I've seen every Alex Garland film. So correct this if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. y'all or chat. I feel like he tends to end his films on notes of just like, like yeah. in a sense of like saying like, well, things aren't looking great, kids.
Mm-hmm.
There is humanity. Like he shows us humanity, and he'll show us what humanity can do. But I think overall, at the end of a film like this, Garland's saying something like, "Hey guys, it's not going well."
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And while I can identify little pockets of humanity and hope, that's the exception to the norm these days.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel, and I feel like the end of the movie, especially when like the last thing is that quote from the president and getting the final shot.
Yeah.
And then we see some like the pictures over the credits of like mm-hmm. the soldiers like smiling and laughing with like the dead body of the president, which I think some yeah. of those images call back to like Guantanamo Bay or whatever.
Yeah.
Or no, or whatever.
There's one specific.
And then also, and I didn't point this out, someone was pointing it out to me, the song that he ends the movie with, and now I'm forgetting the title of it, is the same song that Adam Curtis ends one of his, or that he uses for the main song in one of his documentaries. Adam Curtis, for those who don't know, a BBC documentary maker, makes some films about political reality that are pretty bleak and about how effed up things are.
Yeah.
And, you know, Garland, Englishman, he has access to BBC iPlayer, a wonderful digital service for those who are in the UK or have a VPN. But part of me is like, was Alex Garland, does he watch Adam Curtis documentaries? Have those documentaries left him with this kind of pessimism towards how power functions,
mm-hmm.
and is he putting this song over the credits
yeah.
to kind of wink at us and remind certain people of that moment?
Yeah.
Did you look it up and find out?
I'm trying to find it. All right. I've been like furiously like.
No, because I heard that at the end. I was like, oh, I know this song. And then mm-hmm. A friend was like, oh, yeah, it's the same one Adam Curtis uses.
Oh, is this Dream Baby Dream by
yep.
Suicide?
Yep.
Okay.
And that's, maybe it's like Can't Get You Out of My Head, the Adam Curtis documentary uses that. Someone will know. At least one of your intrepid chatters is a Curtis head.
Someone in the chat, Xenia Wang, saying they saw the movie yesterday in Moscow, really relatable to any anti-war Russian, of which there are a lot, and they can't do much but watch things unfold.
Yeah.
Felt like a great anti-war movie, like an almanac of every bad trait war exposes in people as civilization peels off. Yeah.
And that's a really, they bring up, because people, some are saying it is an anti-war movie.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a warning. Like, I think, and that's part of the perspective that it takes, is just, again, like, you know, Kirsten Dunst's character says, I did all of this, you know, hoping to send a warning back home. I think that's what this film is kind of trying to do for us.
Yeah. And I think it is,
I was just going to say, I think it's effective at that, for me anyway, personally, but it didn't have to work real hard to convince me that that's something to genuinely be concerned about.
Yeah.
So I guess,
like, to with all that said, I think to answer Ryan's question, I feel like it has had a positive impact of that message, but done in a way that is like, you don't feel good.
It's positively communicated, a fundamentally pessimistic message.
Yes, there we go.
Perfect. Yeah, right. Well, there we go.
All right, and then the last question that we'll do here is, sometimes on The Break Room, we describe things as fleshy. Mm-hmm. How fleshy would you rate this movie? I'm saying this movie's got a lot to chew on.
Is this segment sponsored by Fleshlight?
Well, it's funny you say that.
Could you chew on it? Okay.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot to chew on here.
Fleshy. Is it a number scale or just say how fleshy?
How fleshy, yeah. A lot of meat on the bone.
How fleshy?
Yeah. Wow.
Burns is like, wow, Evan really, he really did level up when he left Wisecrack.
Yeah.
Really, really helping spread good in the world here.
Wow. So
making some good takes.
I'm in awe.
Good education.
I would say it's a solid amount of meat on the bone.
Yeah.
It's pretty fleshy, but it's not one of those bites where you're like pulling the piece out to like, because there's so much that you can't chew it. Like, you can definitely like, you can't gum this one, but you can comfortably eat it.
God.
No, I
think it's true. You can't gum it.
No, you know what? Can I say what I'm thinking of gumming? Because people might think something weird.
Yeah.
I have a small child, and she just has gums and no teeth.
Yes.
And she's starting to eat now, so I have to ask myself, can she gum this?
It's never not
can
weird.
Can she gum this?
This is my new streaming show.
Yeah.
Will my daughter gum it, or will I have to hope I can do CPR on stream?
Now that's dystopian.
That's dystopian. That's dark.
But yeah, I would say it's pretty, but I think this is one where like, fleshier than a lot of people are probably saying.
Mm-hmm.
But let's not, I don't want to overplay it. It's not the fleshiest thing
I'd say a 6.5 fleshy, because I don't think we have as many emotional stakes with our characters as we could. And they don't have to chew on their stuff.
I wanted to say that earlier when you brought up the characters, I forgot. I love the whole cast. I really, like, big shout out Stephen McKinley Henderson and Kelly Spaney. I think Kirsten Dunst is just like a little inaccessible in the beginning. Like a little too like, this is war, you know?
Although I guess like if that's the world you're living in.
That's true,
There is no like behind her eyes.
And I will say, I've actually never seen Kaylee Spaney in anything before.
Oh, nice.
You didn't see Priscilla?
I didn't see Priscilla.
I'm the only one who saw Priscilla.
I want to. It's on streaming now.
Yes, that's right.
But I was really impressed. I'm excited to see her career blossom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really interesting. Cool. And she worked with Alex Garland previously in Devs, the TV show he did.
Oh.
Yeah.
I never saw that because so many people told me to watch it, and so many Wisecrack audience members, shout out if any of you are still watching, for a while would just comment like, do a video on devs, do something on devs. And I was just like, don't tell me I'll live my life. Oh, and Offerman was in that too, right?
Offerman. Oh, I think he was, yeah. Or Jason Segel, I don't know. I
think it was Offerman.
Yeah.
Also, I'll just say this. If you just saw the trailers and stuff, didn't you think we were going to see a lot more Offerman?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what.
Almost no Offerman.
Almost no Offerman. Yeah, Dash and I were talking about it earlier. Dash was like, if you watch the trailers, you see everything. And you actually see him getting dragged out.
Mm-hmm.
Which would imply that you would see more Offerman in the movie.
Yeah.
Not to show literally the fourth shot that he's in.
Yeah.
I feel like, it's been a great conversation.
It's been really nice.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for stopping by. Do you guys want to plug anything before we wrap it up here?
I mean, like, yeah, if you're, I mean, I am on Wisecrack. We are trying to stay alive. Everyone is in digital media, so if you haven't watched our channel before, check it out. You might enjoy it. If you enjoyed this conversation, you would enjoy Wisecrack.
Yeah,
if watching this conversation, you were like, snooze or not, this is too in the weeds for me.
Yeah.
Don't. It's fine, and that's
or
okay.
Or give it a
you
try.
No, you don't have to like. You don't have to like it, you know? Everything. And then we
you don't.
You know, we stream different, and not at this time. So is it okay if I mention that?
Yeah.
Our main stream is Wednesdays. 10 a.m. Pacific. That's another stream I do at 10 p.m. Pacific. I don't. I'm sleeping.
Wisecrack after dark.
Yeah, but yeah. So I don't know. Check it out. You know. And Helen's there sometimes, not as much as she should be, but you know.
Maybe I'll be there more. Say nice things in the chat.
Thanks so much for watching. If you like kind of conversations about movies and you're watching on the Wisecrack channel, you follow us here on Break Room, either on YouTube or Twitch. We stream 3 o'clock Pacific. Most weekdays, and then we move the videos over to YouTube so you can see it again. And make sure you guys follow Wisecrack. You can find them on YouTube and on social media. And thanks guys so much for being here.
Thanks, Adam.
And we'll see you later.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. You can check out our Break Room live streams at Break Room NR on Twitch at 3 p.m. Pacific. And don't forget to subscribe on YouTube. You can find us at Break Room NR on Instagram and X. Thanks for listening. Later, Gators.